You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get 1-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, welcome everyone to the From the Shadows podcast. I'm your host, Shane Grove. And before we get started with the episode, I want to give everybody a Jason, the super producer, update. He's still getting better. He's getting stronger. And he wants me to send everybody his thanks for their thoughts and prayers. He thinks they're really, really helping him out. So as he continues with his rehabilitation, and he promises He's going to be back soon. He promises. Now, he's kind of a liar, but I won't say that in front of him, you know. But yes, he promises he'll be back soon. So I'm going to hold him at his word for once. So before we get started, I also want to remind everybody, if you have a paranormal or crazy story you want to share with us, come find us at From the Shadows podcast on Facebook, our forum page After the Shadows on Facebook. You can find me at Shane Grove Author on Instagram or From the Shadows podcast page on Instagram. And we finally got our contact page on our From the Shadows podcast website fixed. So now I will get the emails directly. So if you got a story, go in there, type to your heart's content, send it to me. I promise I'll get to see it. So our guest today is someone I just, because I listen to podcasts all day while I'm working. So I just got introduced to this gentleman's podcast. And once we get into it and start talking about his show, you'll understand why I think everybody's going to want to go listen to his show, because it's very cool, especially for us. In the age group of the host, you're going to have some of the stuff that he talks about and the guest he has on his show will really warm your heart, because it will bring back lots of good memories. So from the Monstrosity podcast, welcome to the show, David Race.
Hey, I like that the guest will warm your heart thing. So I have a lot of really incredibly beautiful women from our past on the show, and warm your heart is one way to put it.
Off the top of my head, yeah. Lonnie Anderson, right? Catherine Bach.
Yep,
Catherine Bach. Mackenzie Phillips.
Three. Can I continue the list?
Go ahead, because all you're doing is whetting the appetite for our male viewers. Or okay. Listeners, I guess.
Well, this one's a little, I don't know, it seems like it's funny when you talk about someone who's actually really currently in the middle of their careers, somehow it's the more obscure person to mention. But Tanya Ramond, who's the really hot chick on Billy Bob Thornton's Amazon show, Goliath, She plays like a prostitute paralegal sidekick of his on Goliath. She was on my show. She's also in Deep Blue Sea 3. She's in Deep Blue Sea. She's in Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3. Lots of things. And then we had Lydia Cornell from Too Close for Comfort from the 80s.
Was she the dark haired one or the blonde?
The blonde.
Okay.
We had, who else came in? I'm blanking out now. Oh, Audrey Landers from Dallas was on. She's one of the Landers sisters, Judy and Audrey Landers.
Oh yeah.
I'm really blanking out now. There's too many hot women to come on the show. I'm getting lost.
Well, let's just say there's a lot of
Jodie Sweetin was on recently from Full House. She's grown up nicely.
Yeah. And for our female listeners, and we have a ton of female listeners, you know, the one episode that I just listened to was Adrian Zemed.
Yes. Adrian Zemed. And, he was great because I have this, innate ability, if I may pat myself on the back for a minute, of getting not just paranormal stories out of these celebrities, which and we never screen them for that, by the way. It's not a requirement that the celebrity come with a paranormal story. They just often seem to have one or don't even kind of know they have one until I ask the right question and suddenly they do. So that's one thing. But the other thing I get out of them is I tend with my questions to get unusual information out of them that they never seem to have told anyone else before. And Adrian Zemed ended up telling me about Heather Locklear, another beauty that we can discuss, and how Heather Locklear every day on the set would take her pants off and moon him.
I can confirm that yeah. Not that she was mooning me on the set. I can confirm that he told that story. That was brilliant.
Yeah. And I, my response was, you know, well, that was more than adequate compensation. I mean, you didn't need any additional salary then.
I'm not sure how far you go as an agent if you were like, you know, negotiating for your client that way. But hey, you know, whatever works.
Right? Well, it's funny. I think he took the bait when I said that, and I think he kind of put on the persona of an agent for a second and said something like, "Let's up that to 3 moons a day." You know, I think he did say something. Oh yeah. Like that.
Yep. That was fantastic. And so we'll just, you know, we'll get into let's your podcast. I haven't gone back and listened to the very first few episodes, but it sounded like originally you had everybody in the same location. And so that's how the paranormal stuff kind of bounced off the, you know, celebrity.
Right. Well, the origin story of this podcast is that,
or wait, I was going to ask this, what is the genesis podcast?
Yeah, so you caught that joke, my running inside. Every episode now has a Genesis reference of some kind, the band Genesis. And it's because I'm the most obsessed Genesis fan in the world. And at some point, I don't remember which episode it was, midway through this, you know, the series, I've done like 20-something episodes. So at some point, like halfway through them, I started noticing that I keep kind of accidentally working Genesis into things I'm saying. And then it became funny to me to do it intentionally. And some of the ways that I've crowbarred them in have just, I've loved, like, listening back to them. I remember one case, I was talking to some woman who was at the Rendlesham Forest UFO incident.
Oh, dear God. Okay, I haven't heard this one. How do you?
She was there in 1980, and, you know, and then she's telling me, you know, she's there for the real thing. You know, she knows all those guys from the Rendlesham thing. And she had her own experiences at Rendlesham that haven't been publicly talked about, really. So she had great stories. And, she's very straight-laced, you know, military type. And then at some point, she just happens to say something like, she's like reflecting on what happened. And she says something like, so I think I had just gotten back to England. I had visited the United States. I was seeing my family or something. I had just gotten back to England. She goes, it was June of 1978. And I landed and I drove from London over to Bentwaters. And, you know, she's just telling her story like that. And I, at the end of like a, you know, a minute or two of that, I stopped her and I go, so it was June of 78? And she goes, yes. I go, did you stop and see Genesis at Nebworth? And she just goes, what? And I go, she goes, the band? She goes, Phil Collins, the band? I go, yes, Genesis. Did you? They played Nebworth that month. Did you stop and see them? And she goes, no, no. She goes, but I'm a big fan. Like, she was just taking it back, just puzzled. and I go, great show. I go, Tom Petty opened, Jefferson Starship opened. I go, this is some very good bootlegs of it. You know, and then we just went back to UFOs. I got like the crowbarring in of Genesis, you know.
I love it. But they, hey, but there you know then. If people were really listening to your show, you know right. what I'm saying? So like when I say I'm listening to the episodes, I'm not just blowing smoke. I have listened to a handful of episodes and I truly enjoy them. And I enjoy your sense of humor, which probably helps because you are a comedian by trade, right?
Yes, I am. I'm previously a disc jockey. I was a radio disc jockey in New York, Philadelphia for a long time. Turned to comedian, and then moved to Los Angeles and continued being a comedian, and now seem to have found my way back to, you know, sort of radio.
Yeah, exactly.
But what was I going to say? So the Genesis thing, yeah, it's a running joke, and you know, of all of the, you know, with all the beautiful women that have come in on the show, which I love. That's, I mean, I joked on, I think the Daisy Duke episode. I think I said to her, I go, it's like the posters from my teenage wall come walking in, you know, I mean, it's just, it's such a weird thing to be sitting 3 feet away from Daisy Duke suddenly. And it's like, you were on my wall for a long time. What are you doing here? You know? But that, as thrilling as all of that is, I don't think any episode, you know, got me more excited, not sexually, but just, you know, excited in general. Than when I had Steve Hackett from Genesis on the show.
I have not heard that. I mean, that your mind had to be, how could you even function?
Yeah, I mean, it was unreal. In fact, I went out of sequence. We, at the time, here's an inside thing I've never told anywhere in any interview. At the time, I always opened the episodes with, you know, blah, 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 blah. It's episode number 6 or whatever number it was, you know. And then the Steve Hackett thing fell into our lap. We had Steve Hackett like wanting to do the show, and I had just recorded a different episode that we were about to release, and like it was, so let's, I don't remember the days, but let's just, you know, hypothetically, you know, yeah. Tuesday I recorded what I thought would be the next episode. Thursday I find out Steve Hackett wants to do the show in a couple days, that kind of thing, and he needs it released, you know, in the next week or two because he's promoting tour dates. It was that type of situation. So I said, I'm not turning down Steve Hackett. This is like the most exciting thing ever. So I went and recorded Steve Hackett. But at that point, I had been introducing the episodes with numbers, like it's episode 6, it's episode 5, whatever it was. And I had already recorded the episode that should be next in the sequence. And now I suddenly had Steve Hackett booked and needed to put his out first before the one I just recorded. So I referred to that episode as a wild card episode. I didn't give it a number. I just like the audience was probably like, what the hell is he talking about? I was like, it's a wild card. They don't even know what the hell I'm talking about. They don't know when I recorded things. Yeah. But it was my only way to explain why the show would have otherwise been out of sequence. If I went, this is, you know, if I said, here, this is episode 10. And then the next, you know, time I released one, it was episode 9. So I had to call it a wild card episode.
The super bonus episode. Yeah.
Right. Oh, yeah. So I called it a wild card. But anyway, yeah, it was beyond thrilling to me. And any Genesis fan listening to this, listen to me talk to Steve Hackett. You will never, ever hear Steve Hackett ask better Genesis questions than I asked him. I think he almost stopped and said, this is unbelievable. I mean, like, I am that deep into Genesis. And he credited me with this. He acknowledged this on Twitter because he's right. I am responsible. Steve Hackett, his big thing now is he goes on tour and he plays, you know, like 3,000 seaters around the world, the U.S. included, doing mostly Genesis songs, mostly a Genesis show. You know, he has a very good band. They play note for note accurately, the Genesis stuff. And he tends to focus on particular periods, like you'll do a certain Genesis album, start to finish, that kind of thing. And I said to him on my show, why don't you do the live album, Genesis's Seconds Out live album, the last thing you were ever on. Why don't you do that whole double album straight through next time? You know, because it just seemed to me obvious that he hadn't gotten to that, and it was glaringly the right choice because it has all the right songs. And he goes, that's a great idea. He goes, that's a very, very good idea. Within a month, they announced the Seconds Out tour. And then I tweeted at him, you know, hey, you know, listen to Steve Hackett on my show, blah, 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 you know, where I give him this idea. And he tweeted back, that's correct. Like, he acknowledged that I'm responsible for this.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So those of you who are going to see the Steve Hackett tour that's going on right now, the Seconds Out tour, it was my idea.
Oh, I love it. Hey, I love it. And that's the beauty of, you know, like for me doing the podcast, to get to meet some of the people that, like in the paranormal field, that I'm big fans of or big followers of, and kind of become friends with them, you know. And I'm sure out there, I mean, you live out in California, like you said, you're a comedian, so you are rubbing elbows with famous people probably more often than not.
Right.
And so it probably takes a lot for you to get starstruck. And just hearing you tell that story about that situation, I can tell that meant a lot. I mean, that's
the whole idea that a guy from Genesis walks around the street right now and someone could walk up to him and go, hey, what do you think of that David Race guy? The fact that Steve Hackett would go, oh yeah, good guy, I like him. The idea that Steve Hackett would know who I am, it blows my mind.
So let's get into then why the paranormal, like how did the paranormal,
how did this all happen? Yeah.
How did this get to a comedian in California?
Yeah. Here's how.
Got
the full answer for you.
All right.
So it's going to go, I'm going to back pretty far, but I'm going to give you the whole answer. Cause there's a podcast before the one that right now I'm doing, Monstrosity with David Race. That's the podcast we've been talking about the last few minutes. And there was a podcast predating this one, before this one, called Comedians Talking About Bigfoot. That was the first podcast I ever did. And I did that one in 15 and 2015. I did 7 episodes, and then I got a TV deal out of that one really quick. And I ended up doing a TV pilot with the guys from Monster Quest, based on that show. And that pilot, we shot it for a week, and then we were working on it in various ways for quite a while after that, and it ended up not selling. And then it was after that whole period, and that podcast had happened, that TV pilot had happened, was after a year gone by or whatever it was that I was, you know, or a couple years gone by between the podcast and the TV thing, that I returned to podcasting, I think in 2018. And when I came back to podcasting, I decided Comedians Talking About Bigfoot was Bigfoot only, didn't go into other things, didn't go to ghosts, UFOs, didn't go to any of that. And it was, the format was me, a couple comedians I know, whoever I felt like grabbing from around town in LA, and a paranormal guy, usually on the phone. That was, so it would be like, it would be me in studio, 2 comedians I know in studio, and then on the phone, Bobo from Finding Bigfoot. That was sort of a typical episode. And then when I came back to doing podcasting and I came back to and created Monstrosity with David Race, I decided that Monstrosity would be broader than Bigfoot. It would be Bigfoot one episode, UFOs the next one, ghosts the next one, Loch Ness Monster next one, back to Bigfoot, that kind of thing. And I also decided that it wouldn't necessarily be just comedians. It would be celebrities in the more general sense, as opposed to just comedians. So the first batch of episodes, maybe, you know, somewhere around 10 episodes, were all pre-COVID. They were all recorded before COVID. And one of the beautiful things about LA is that you have celebrities in town. So you were able to get people to come in. So I was doing, you know, I was doing this really neat triangular combo of me and Shadow Stevens in the room together. And then on the phone, you know, the guy from the Mutual UFO Network, you know, and it became a very interesting dynamic of Shadow Stevens and me talking to a UFO guy. And then COVID happened. I think Shadow is the last episode before COVID. Then COVID happens. and the format changes a bit to what it is now. Everyone's on ISDN, which is like a technical term for like the, you know, a fed in audio line. Like,
yeah, not, yeah,
and,
yeah.
And so now the celebrity is done as a separate segment from the Bigfoot guy. So now it's, if hypothetically I did one with Shadow Stevens tomorrow, it would be me and Shadow Stevens for a half hour. Thanks, Shadow. Good night. On to Bobo from Finding Bigfoot. And then a half hour with him. So they don't interact. They don't cross over with each other like they used to pre-COVID, where it was a different dynamic.
How do you like that? Did you like it better when everybody was interacting, or do you like it better now that you can kind of focus on
there's positive and negative to both. I definitely liked better that the celebrity was in the room with me. That I liked better. Mainly because most of the time I made sure it was Daisy Duke. But the other thing is that it changes, you know, there are changes to the dynamic of not having, like, it's neat to hear, I don't know, Lonnie Anderson get forced into a discussion with a ghost expert. It's just like neat to put, you know, to put people on wobbly chairs like that, you know, on three-legged chairs, you know, it's just neat to do it. But the upside of the current version of the show is that there's more space. The show breathes better or differently. Also, some of the celebrities that you could tell when I'm doing the episode, you could probably listen to the episodes and see what I mean. Some are more comfortable with the paranormal stuff than others. You can tell which ones sort of feel like, yeah, this is part of why I came in to do the show. I'm excited about this. Like they're eager to sort of, they're interested in the topics, or they have their own take on it, their own incident. They, you know, that's just part of what interested them about doing my show. Other ones you could tell, like when I say to them, all right, so we're about to talk to, you know, Johnny Johnson from the Bigfoot, you know, Club of Nevada, you know, you could tell the celebrities kind of like, all right, I'm going to check out now. Like they don't really want to be associated with that. Like they sort of clam up for like a half hour and then get back to talking. You know, an example of that is I had Mike Damone, Robert Romanus from Fast Times at Ridgemont High. And he was great. And I really liked that episode. But you could hear in the paranormal portion of the show, he kind of doesn't want any part of it.
Now, is that so? I'm assuming then he's the one of the celebrities that did not have a story to share, because up till the episodes that I've listened to, all the celebrities have had probably way better stories than what you even expected.
Yeah, they usually are better than well, they're usually not at all expected. We never screen them for that. We never make that a requirement. So I'd say most times they surprise me. Sometimes I know, like, say, when we sit down to, we're about to record the show, they might say to me, oh, I had a great UFO incident. It really scared the wits out of me. And I'll go, hold on. Stop. Tell me that on the show. Like that. And the first I'm finding out that they're going to tell me something like that is, you know, in the minute before we start. So sometimes I have a little bit of a tip that they have somewhere they want me to go with them like that. But some of the times I didn't know at all until it spontaneously happened. And yes, I think Romanus was one of the guys that had none of that.
And so, you know what that tells me is he had probably the best story and didn't want to share it because he didn't want to come off as a nut job. I'm calling him out right now.
He was kind of reserved. He had almost Damone's personality. What's funny is he sounds just like Damone. Like it's not a put on voice. Mm-hmm. So you're really in a conversation with Damone, and I don't do impressions, and one of the few impressions I can do reasonably well is Damone. I found myself doing Damone straight to Damone, back and forth, and we were doing stereo Damones. You know, I think at one point I said to him, and I meant it because, like, you know, we usually offer the guest, you know, water or tea or coffee or whatever they want, and I think at some point in the first few minutes of the show, as Damone, I said to him, "Would you like some lemonade?" You know, and then he, like, almost not even catching on that you're doing Damone, because to him that's a normal voice. I think he responded something like, "That sounds lovely." you know, you know, it was like back and forth. It was going on and on. It kept happening.
Oh, that's spectacular. I mean, I listen, this is the stars that you've talked to. I mean, and I know like our demographic is about, you know, they're people that most of the people that listen to our show are in our, and you and my demographic, you know,
well, so they're gonna, natural people are going to listen to somebody who has a point of view that they relate to, you know, in which, so if you're 25, you're gonna have a certain kind of millennial point of view. If you're 55, you're gonna have a certain kind of point of view that, and, you know, I would imagine that it's about relatability. You know, the 22-year-old wants to hear someone relatable talking to them about Euphoria or something.
Yeah. And that's so I'm fully excited to hear some feedback on our listeners that go check out some of these episodes, because it is like I was listening to the one the guy that plays Larry on Three's Company
today. Oh, that's a great one.
I was like, yeah, that's a great. It is fantastic. It just took me right back to. You know, I totally related to your story about you missing Three's Company to go to the hockey games. And then just like, oh, man, that was such a great night on television.
Yep. It was. The Islanders, I had Islanders season tickets as a kid. And the Islanders were always in conflict with Three's Company. Always in conflict with Three's Company. And then I kind of remember they were in conflict with Family Ties, too. So I liked that show at the time. I used to.
Thursday night must have been Ranger night.
So
or Islander.
Islanders were Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays, if I recall.
Oh man, the couple of the best nights of television.
Yeah, because the Rangers were like, the Rangers were the other days, like Sunday, you know, the alternate days of those, whatever those were. But
which is funny about the Three's Company one, and it dawned on me that. John Ritter, I believe, went to college here in Ohio, not too far away. And the Regal Beagle is actually a bar in that college town here in Ohio. And that's where the name came from.
Interesting. I never knew that. See, if I knew that, I would have mentioned that to Larry from Three's Company. And he wouldn't have known it either. But did you catch that with Larry from Three's Company? We had, it's Richard Klein, by the way, for those who want to correct me on who it is, his name. But, when we had Richard on, we had him get a phone call from a cameo phone call from heaven from Mr. Unfurley.
Yeah.
Which was the great Tom Becker, who's a comedian I know in LA that does really good impressions. And one of the ones he does is Don Knotts really well. So I had him call in as Mr. Unfurley, and Richard Klein loved that call.
I gotta be honest with you. I would have much rather, I'm right there with you. And if, you know, I do some writing myself, if you're ready to do the pitch for Mr. Furley and Larry at the strip club with a couple, I mean, that.
Yeah, that's a great example of a story that I've never heard him tell anybody that I got out of him. And that was what you're talking about, Shane, is the Richard Klein told me that he and Don Knotts at the time of the show when they were doing Three's Company went to Vegas together for the weekend, and they were at strip clubs all the time, and Don Knotts is a real womanizer, and there was, you know, women crawling off of them. They were drinking, gambling, strippers, women, you know, just crawling off of them. And I had to kind of do a double take verbally, you know, and I just kind of stopped and I said, hold on. So you're telling me Larry Dallas and Mr. Furley went to Vegas together at the height of the show with girls crawling off them? And he goes, yeah, that is what I'm telling you. And that made some press. That was one of like six episodes that made international press that got some cool news press and stuff.
Did you double check to make sure that just wasn't an episode of Three's Company?
Yeah, it sounds like. I mean, it's
like when the Brady Bunch went to Hawaii or something.
Yeah, how great. I mean, how great is it? They're both basically in character.
That's fantastic. That is.
And you were talking about Lonnie Anderson earlier. When it's funny with Lonnie Anderson, that was one of the earlier episodes of the show. I think it was like in the first five episodes. And when we booked Lonnie, we had already kind of been looking at WKRP and Cincinnati people. And Lonnie was not our first thought because we thought she'll be too hard to get. we thought like she's not going to be the one that's likely to do the show. We were like, we thought like start with Herb's Harlech, you know. and we ended up after a couple, you know, attempts, I don't remember who, finally, maybe the third try, we thought, all right, try Lonnie Anderson. What the hell? Just spitball it out there. And then that's who took the booking. And then once we had Lonnie secured, we went back to some of the other Three's Company people to see if any of them want to come on with her. And it was like immediate. Tim Reed, Venus Flytrap is like, I'll go anywhere Lonnie is. Lonnie's on the road. I'm on. Yeah.
That's fair. And he's a great interview. I mentioned, I listened to WTF and Maron had him on, and it was one of the best interviews ever with Tim, listening to Tim Reed. He's fantastic.
Yeah. And we didn't see, that's a good example of, I like the spontaneity. This goes back to my Stern Show days. Before I was disc jockey, I was Howard's intern in the late 80s when the staff was just me, Howard, Gary, Fred, Jackie, and Robin. That's it. There was no one else there. It wasn't like today where Howard has interns that don't even meet him. I shared a desk with Howard. And one of the things I learned there is, the spontaneity, and you don't do things that aren't in front of the microphone and things like that. And so I did not tell Lonnie that Tim was coming on until she was sitting there on mic. We literally dropped on her and on the phone, your friend, Tim Reed, that was all done right.
That's awesome. So let's get back to the paranormal side of this. What's your fascination with the paranormal?
So yeah, it all goes back. I told you the first podcast was in 2015, but I had my own paranormal background, and the earliest part of it is just the same as everybody's, in our age group, which is, as a kid, I liked, Leonard Nimoy's In Search Of and things like that.
Yep.
So I was, interested in the topics from that perspective as a little kid, as a viewer and stuff. But later on in 2007, fall of 2007, and I swear to God, Genesis ties into this. I was on the East Coast to see Genesis.
Let's be honest. Even if it didn't, you would find a way to.
Yeah, but they really do. They really do. It's their fault again. I was on the East Coast to see Genesis in fall of 2007. And my father had a house upstate New York. I'm from Long Island. So for me, home is Long Island. And the shows I was seeing, the concerts I was seeing that week were in the New York metro area, the Madison Square Garden, Giant Stadium, those things. And then, but later that week, I was there for like probably a week or so. Later that week, we went upstate New York to my father's vacation-ish house with him and his wife, and my wife and I went up. And I've been there a million times, but it's upstate New York, several hours from the New York metro. And it's in the Adirondacks or whatever the hell mountains that is. And it's on its own 55 acre mountain that he owns or used to own. And the house was up on the top of the plateau in a clearing of the woods. But I mean, way up. I mean, the property's 55 acres. You have to go up a private, cobblestone road through gates to get up to the top of the mountain where the house is. And there's no neighbors. The nearest neighbor is like a mile the other way or something, and we were up there, and in the middle of the night, late in the evening, maybe 10, 11 o'clock at night, my wife was out on the balcony looking through the telescope at the stars and stuff up there. It's so clear at night. And she was standing there by herself, and I was just sitting in the living room watching through the window. And I started noticing that she would seem spooked. Like she'd be looking through the telescope and then kind of stop. Like she hears something, kind of look to her left, look to her right, then go back to the telescope, then kind of look around again. Just looking spooked by something. And she's not like that. So then she pops her head in and says to me, I go, what, she says something weird's happening out here. I feel like I'm being watched or whatever. And I said, what are you talking about? She goes, I'm hearing like noises, and then like a rabbit runs by and like running for its life. And then I want to come in now. And she comes in, And I, at this point, I don't know my Bigfoot stuff that well. So I didn't connect that to Bigfoot. I now understand like how that would tie to a Bigfoot incident, but I didn't at the time. And fast forward to hours later, we're asleep. And this is a log cabin in the middle of the woods. We're asleep. And about 3 a.m, something pounds on the wall next to our heads. I mean, a pounding nothing normal could do. Like it would shatter your hand into dust if you ever hit something this hard. Boom, 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 that kind of thing. And the pounding was right near the window where we were sleeping, you know, probably 10 feet plus in height. And any normal person would say to me right now, okay, so you jumped up and opened the window and what'd you see? And that's not what we did. It was, you know, when you get woken out of a dead sleep in the pitch dark and the quiet of the woods, I don't know. You're just so asleep that you just, maybe other people would have, but we didn't, for whatever reason, pop the blinds open. We just kind of jumped up like, you know, nearly heart attack, woken up, you know, and looked at each other and went, what the hell is, and just our heads fell back to the pillow. We didn't sit up and tip the blinds. In hindsight, I'm glad we didn't, because I'd still be unconscious in that room right now. Because I would have been face to face with something. And we didn't. Now, the next day, I asked my father if anything weird happened on his side of the house, we had something pounded on the wall last night. And he goes, no. And then I started asking him, nothing weird ever happened up here. And he starts just telling me, like, he's kind of my father's ex-cop. And he's just the kind of matter-of-factly telling me these things, not realizing the significance of them. But he's telling me these things like, nah, nothing really. I mean, a couple of times I found a dead deer like over on the trail over there, or he would just have weird stories that, again, I didn't know my Bigfoot stuff well enough to know then, but I now know that he's describing Bigfoot kills, broken neck, a deer with a broken neck, those sort of things. And they used to have a dog that they would put in the dog run outside, and like the dog would be terrified and like the dog wasn't really, you know, generally like that. Like I realize now the different things that they're describing to me were going on. Anyway, fast forward to, I don't know how many months later, but somewhere, you know, not long after, I get more into the Bigfoot topic for whatever reason. I start reading up on it. Maybe I become interested in, I don't remember what provoked it. It was probably that incident got me like reading up on what that could have been. And it got me reading more on Bigfoot. And I started watching Finding Bigfoot a lot. And I started realizing this incident wasn't that off the, you know, the path of things that happened on Finding Bigfoot incidents, Bigfoot pounding on the wall, those sort of things. Monster Quest, I was watching around that time probably. Anyway, that causes me to report the incident to the BFRO. And the guy calls me, the investigator for that area calls me, and he interviews me for like an hour and a half. And he's asking me all these crazy detailed questions. And then he calls me back the next day with follow-up questions, like another 45 minutes of questions. And I now know, because I've become friendly with Matt Moneymaker, that Matt's read the report in their database. And Matt considers it a valid Bigfoot incident. It's not an eyewitness sighting, which they'd call a Class A sighting. They classify them, but it's whatever the hell classification they would call something that they don't have any other explanation for. They think a Bigfoot is the likely thing, but I didn't eye to eye see it. Now, what I also didn't know at the time is that the house we're talking about, where this was upstate New York, was very, very close to Whitehall, New York, a notorious Bigfoot hotspot.
Yeah.
The house was within 30 minutes of that. And I did, those are not things I understood at the time, but I now can tell you this was in the general area of that. So Matt has this, you know, has this down as a Bigfoot incident. And I agree with him because I don't have any other explanation for what in the world that could have been. You know, when I tell skeptics this story, they say, well, I mean, couldn't a deer have done that? Yeah. I mean, really? The deer would have been laying there unconscious, legs up. I mean, he rammed himself into the wall like a freight train 3 times at 10 feet in height in the middle of the night. What did he leap to do that? Exactly. How did he do that? You know, same with a bear. It doesn't make any sense. Nothing about any other explanation makes sense. And given the geography where I was in relation to Whitehall and things like that. You know, when you sort of put the various dynamics of that story together, you get a big fit into it. And anyway, that led to my interest in it.
Well, I mean, I listen to a lot of Bigfoot podcasts, and especially Wes on Sasquatch Chronicles. That's the one thing he says. He goes, when you start going through all the things that it could be, and suddenly they sound more ridiculous than just saying, "Hey, look, it was a Bigfoot." Mm-hmm. That's when you know, like a deer running into the cabin. That's crazy.
Three times in a row, bang, well, bang, bang.
The deer would be there.
Yeah, he also, but everything's wrong with it. The pace of it is wrong. Bang, bang, bang. That's not the right pace of running into the thing. It would have been bang, fall back, dot, 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 bang, fall back, dot, 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 you know, not bang, bang, bang. It also wouldn't have been at 10 feet in height unless he's leaping into the thing. And now you're going to say, okay, three deer did it. So three deer leapt into the wall at 10 feet in height. All of them survived this smash into the wall. And they all did this for no reason. Because they were in a Jim Jones deer cult. What exactly?
They were training. They were training for the tryouts for Santa Claus's sled.
Yeah. Nothing else starts making sense. You know, someone might say to me, a person. Okay. What person wandered a couple thousand feet in the air up to the top of a private property mountain, 55 acres in, to the clearing of a house in the middle of the night, climbed a ladder, smashed their hand into the wall three times at 10 feet in height, so hard that their hand would have been shattered into dust, and they'd forevermore be in, you know, arm traction with metal around their arms. What human did that, and what human would have risked their lives doing that?
Well, and people that say that have never been out in the middle of nowhere, okay, and don't realize that people just don't mess around. Like, if you're out in the middle of nowhere, if you're going to sneak up on a cabin like that, you're sneaking up on a cabin like that to rob it, not to just go beat on the side of it, because usually people in the middle of nowhere have shotguns or rifles. Right.
Let me also remind you, this is a heavy log cabin. This is not something that you really can beat on the side on. In other words, a human being beating on the side of this thing, I don't think would be audible. You're talking about thick, yeah, you know, thick three, four foot dense logs this thing was built of. You know, I don't think you would have heard a human hitting it.
Wow.
And this is not a campground. This is private property. You're 55 acres, private property, 2,000 feet in the air at this place.
So did you, once you started doing
Let me take back to 2,000, because there's going to be some technophile who's going to go, there are no mountains in New York that are 2,000. I'm taking a wild Los Angeles guess when I say 2,000. You know, maybe the top of a mountain in the New York area upstate is more like 1,000 or 900. Okay, fine. Shut the fuck up. That's what it was instead. It was whatever height the New York mountains are. Forget the number I just told you. It's still not a human being that did it.
Well, so once you started like doing a little more research and then actually talking to the BFR, did you go back to your dad and say, "Hey, look"?
Yes.
Remember that? What was his reaction? What was his reaction?
His was a typical ex-New York cop reaction. Like, you know, he always, anything I say to him, he always sort of acts like I'm crazy, no matter what topic it is. So, like, I'm his eccentric son, you know, on any topic, you know. So his reaction was, you know, somewhere in that family. So I'm like, all right, okay, all right, goodbye, David. You know, like he ended the call or something. You know, like, not mad at me, just like he's heard enough of my nonsense for this. He's got to get back to the Giant game, that kind of thing.
He's annoyed now he has to face the fact that he may have a Bigfoot out there.
No, he doesn't. He doesn't face that as a fact. He hears me as like kind of a nut job, and he just like, okay, all right, the Yankees are in the ninth inning. I have no time for this. It's that kind of thing.
So, do you ever expect the phone call from him that says, "You know what? You might have been right because this is what"?
No.
No. Never. No. Never.
No, I don't. And he actually sold that house a couple years after the incident, like within, let's say, 3 years of the incident, he sold that house.
Yeah, because he was tired of being agitated by Bigfoot.
No, I would have sold the house long before for that reason. But he, maybe it wasn't 3 years. It could have been more than 3 years, but it was, you know, sometime after, you know, say 5-7 years, within a few years of that incident, he sold the house. And he owned that property since the late 60s. And the house was built like in the late 70s, early 80s. So the house was there since, like, let's say 79, 80. And then he sold it, you know, several years after that incident. So he no longer lives there.
Oh, that, listen, that makes, I know, you know, my dad was hard headed and he would never want to admit that I was right about something. So it makes me wonder if maybe he did experience something and he's like, you know what? I'm not telling him that he was right. I'm just going to sell the house and get out of here.
No, that's not my father. My father is not the type that would really believe this or buy into this. It would really actually take a Bigfoot standing there, you know, I'm talking about standing there, like staring at him as clearly as any human being could be staring at him from 10 feet away for him to comprehend that.
Hey, listen, what, maybe it did. I'm just throwing it out there that maybe that's what happened.
I think if that happened, he would have told me.
Okay. All right. So then that sighting and then doing the research leads you to want to talk more about the sub, and then you're in California.
Right. Well, you know, I get increasingly into the subject after that. Around that time, yeah, I start getting really into it. Like I start becoming an avid Bigfoot book reader. Shortly after that, after giving my report to the BFRO, and like I just really start getting really into it. Like I needed Bigfoot Anonymous. and I remember I was like, always, you know, taking out books from the LA library on Bigfoot. I didn't want to buy like hundreds of Bigfoot books. I was always like shopping the LA library system for Bigfoot books and like having them sent to the nearest library to me, you know, and going grabbing them. And I remember being on a few vacations in the Caribbean in Mexico and sitting there with my wife at like a nice resort, and she's reading like normal things that grown people read, you know, like whatever book, you know, a woman be reading on the beach. And I'm next to her like with a book, like, you know, could that have been a Bigfoot? Like the cover is like a Bigfoot, like looking at you through like a tree line, like people are walking by, you know, this 5-star resort on the beach. And like, that's what the husband is reading. It looked ridiculous. Yeah.
You know, though, it's the best thing about podcasts and stuff is I think is finally becoming a little more, I think it's becoming a lot more mainstream and people are becoming a lot more comfortable coming forward and telling their experiences. I mean, it certainly seems that way to me.
Yeah, I would say that's true. I mean, their whole TV network's dedicated to this subject now. I mean, they should change their name. Bill Maher was right when he talked about that a few weeks ago. He was talking about all these networks that kept their name and then stopped doing what their name is. You know, like, I mean, like, why in the world is Travel Channel still called the Travel Channel? Like, what on what planet are they? They have nothing to do with travel.
Absolutely.
But you're right that it's gotten much more mainstream. You're right.
Now that you, okay, so you live out in California, do you, I noticed you call yourself an enthusiast, which I have called myself that many times because I'm not going out looking for anything.
Right.
Is that the same way that you kind of,
exactly. In fact, yeah, you're the first guy I've talked to hosting a show in this genre who has that same point of view as me. Like, you know, I'm watching this whole thing from the couch, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, I've got drug out. I got drug out one time and something happened. And I'm just like, look, this is why I'm not going out, because what am I going to do if I see one? Okay. I've had people call me and be guests on our show that have had sightings 40, 50 years ago, and it shook them up so bad. It took them that long to come forward and tell their stories because they thought they were crazy. You know, they thought themselves as crazy. Did I really see this? Well, I don't really want to go out into the woods and come face to face with a 9-foot tall.
Yeah. We're of the same point of view on this. I've had things happen in my life that in one case forced me to be involved more deeply than that. than I'd want to be. And then in the other case, didn't force me, but I turned down something that anyone listening to this show would be thinking, you turned that down? Like, what's wrong with you? The thing that forced me was the TV deal. You know, when I had the TV pilot thing going, we had to go film for a week, and I, you know, was much more on the ground involved in this stuff than I would want to be. The thing I turned down was after Matt Moneymaker and I became friendly, he asked me to go with him to a personal Bigfoot area that he keeps secret, that he has incidents at all the time. And he's like, I think it was like, you know, we were talking like on a Wednesday afternoon, and he's like, come on down Friday, just drive down. And, you know, he only lives a couple hours from me. So he was like, you know, drive down and, you know, we'll go in my car, you know, I have an SUV, and I'm telling you, you're going to see something that night. We'll just sit there, and it's a private spot that only I know about. I don't reveal where this place is, but I want you to see this because it's unbelievable. And I was like, nah, you go and tell me about it. You know, he's like, and then I remember saying to him something like, you know, if I could throw a camera crew together quick enough, and that is the TV show, then I can go. That would be the basis for doing that. But if we're talking about just me and you are going, and this is not on camera, and I'm just because I want to experience this, you have the wrong man for the job.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I'll tell you, one of the guys that was the reason we started the show is one of my friends. We call him the judge because he's an actual judge here in our county. Okay. And he had a dog man experience when we were in high school many years ago. He actually went to law school with Moneymaker at Akron University. Mm-hmm. And he always says, he would always, you know, the judge, he's always like, you know, we'd have like study group, or we'd be sitting there and he'd be like, everybody'd say, hey, what are you doing this weekend? Or what'd you do this weekend? He goes, Moneymaker would always say, I'm going to go do some camping. He goes, never once did he say, hey, I'm going to go look for Bigfoot.
Right.
But well, that's where I think he had one of
those. Something you would say yeah. That time.
Yeah. I think that's where he had one of his very first sighting was near when he was going to law school there. It was just south there. And
well, he's the real deal. I mean, I've said to him on my show that he's the most authentic Bigfoot guy. He's the real deal. He is the Steve Irwin of Bigfoot.
Now, does he, so I know a lot of the BFRO guy, you know, like that, how should I say it? The line they toe is that Bigfoot's nothing but a flesh and blood creature, either, a relic hominid or, you know, an ape that's undiscovered. Now, is that what you get from him, that that is all he believes it is, or is there any room for there might be something maybe paranormal in some of the cases?
He is definitely much more open-minded than that. In fact, in the last interview I did with him, he's the only paranormal guy I've had on twice because we don't do that many episodes. So it's like maybe once.
Yeah, I was gonna complain about that, but go ahead.
Yeah, the show you know we get legit celebrities on the show, like, you know, Lonnie Anderson and Peter from the Brady Bunch and you know, whoever I'm having on this week or next week is not the easiest people to just come by, like left and right. And it's not as even I live in LA, but it's not as dime a dozen as that. You can't just at will snap your fingers and go, David Spade, get in here. You know, they're not, you know, as simple to book as, you know, regular sort of people are. So between that and the fact that the show is done in a real, you know, real studio in LA, an actual high-end studio, and there's production elements, there's advertisers and blah, blah, blah. You know, it's not a show that at the moment can be put together, you know, with tremendous frequency. You know, it takes like kind of a month to throw one together. But that said, I had Matt on twice because Matt was on one of the early episodes, like one of the first three. And then he's on again in a very recent episode. And in the recent one, we went down the road you're talking about. We talked about some of my theories about other things Bigfoots could be. And he's much more open-minded to that than you know, the perspective you were just talking about.
You know, that made me want, because I've heard people talk that, you know, they've given reports to the BFRO and included some of that stuff. And then in the final report, it's all gone. It's like whitewashed out of there. And I don't know
if they're doing that. I didn't ask him that, but I know he's more open-minded than that point of view. I'm just remembering that like not very long after he was on my show the first time, when I started having a pretty good rapport with him off the air, I was being interviewed on some other podcast, and I knew going into that podcast before I went on, it wasn't a paranormal show. It wasn't a show that has any, you know, thematic overlap like yours overlaps with mine. It wasn't like that. The podcast I was going on to be a guest on in that case was totally off that subject, you know, but I knew they were going to talk to me about my career and me, and that stuff would come up, and I knew there would be skepticism, that they would take a very skeptical, you know, average person point of view on it. I knew it. And so I prepared him in advance off, without them knowing it. I told him a day before what I'm doing and to be ready for this. And when I was on that podcast and they started razzle dazzling me with trying to hit me with the skeptical questions and, you know, trying to expose that I don't know what I'm talking about. And it's all, of course it was a human being, whatever nonsense they would, you know, regular people would say to you in these cases. I said to them at some point after like a bunch of that, I go, all right, you know what? In like a Woody Allen kind of move, like where he grabs the guy off the line during the movie theater line, I just went, you know, let me have someone else handle this for me, and they'll satisfy all your skepticism. And I dialed that moneymaker into the show.
That's spectacular. That is spectacular. It's good. It's good to have friends and have their numbers. That's
true. I just stuck him into the. I told him I was going to do it, but I did it. It actually was really funny. It was just funny to go, listen, you know, all you stupid questions. Here's the host of Finding Bigfoot. Let him handle
it. What are they going to say? They're probably like, man, this is great. This is fantastic. So is there someone asking? So have you any UFO, any ghost experiences or not?
Ghost, not so much. I mean, that I could for sure tell you was that, you know, UFO. Yes. I've talked about this, in the last, year or so on some other show. I don't recall, but I haven't talked about it all that much. So your audience is probably the second audience to hear this one. I was driving in LA, I don't know, 5 years ago or thereabouts, rough guess. And I always, when I tell this story, I always like to really lay out for the person listening the streets I was on, so they can Google Earth it along with me, and they can understand, you know, they could street view it and go, okay, I can see through his eyes now. So for those of you playing along at home, I was driving on Victory Boulevard in Los Angeles, in the San Fernando Valley, approaching Sepulveda Boulevard. Heading to a meeting, a TV meeting in Burbank. And it was mid-afternoon on a weekday, if I recall. And when I was facing east, so I'm saying all this for the guy who's Google Earthing this with me right now. I was facing east on Sepulveda. I'm sorry, on Victory, facing Sepulveda. And I first noticed, while I'm at that light, I noticed in the sky little silver dots, maybe a half dozen of them, kind of changing positions from each other. One goes right, one goes left, another one zigzags over here, and this one goes over there, just kind of oscillating around each other, changing positions. They were very small dots in the sky in the dead east of where I was, you know, where I was looking straight east in the sky. So they would have been like roughly over Burbank or something. And they were very high up, it looked like to me, you know, glinting in the sunlight a little bit, but really small, moving around. And I'm thinking, that's really strange. And then I'm watching it through the whole light sequence while I'm waiting to make a turn or whatever I was going to do. And then I made my right turn onto Sepulveda, and I decided to pull over really quickly. And I pulled over, I remember, into like a parking lot right near there that was in front of like a paint store or something. And I parked my car in the little spots there where you're facing east still. So like basically I created a permanent traffic light situation where I'm just staring east. And continued to watch this for another several minutes. And I think I called my wife and told her what I'm watching. And then after a few more minutes of this, I you know, hung up with her, and I decided I need to keep driving because I you know, had a certain time I had to be at a meeting. So I thought, let me just stay on the surface streets and keep driving east, and I'll probably still have eyes on this thing because I'm going directly at it the whole way that I got to keep going. So I continued heading east, and it wasn't very long, like maybe half a mile further before I lost sight of them. And I don't know if they actually flew away and vanished, or I just lost sight of them in the sky. As you drive, you just sort of somehow lost their position because they were so tiny in the sky. I don't know exactly how they were lost, if they were literally left or if they just were lost to my eye, but they no longer were visible to me. Now, after that incident, I looked at videos online trying to describe, like on YouTube, what I'd seen to see if I could see anything that looks like what I saw. And I was stunned to see that there were many UFO videos that were really basically identical to what I saw.
Wow. And so that's like, when did you say that happened? About a year and a half ago?
No, I want to say it's at least 5 years ago.
5 years ago? Okay.
It's hard for me to remember exactly when, but I'd say at least 5 years ago.
Okay. And so since then, of course, we've had whatever disclosure we want to consider it with, you know, the military coming out and the Pentagon coming out with that there's off-world vehicles in our possession. So, and then obviously the Tic Tac video. So how does that, did that, like at the time when you saw it, were you like, did I really see something? And did it make you feel better when, you know, not that anything the government does makes us feel better, but it'd make you feel better when they came out and said, hey,
no,
look.
No, nothing about the government disclosures enlightened me. I mean, anyone who's, you know, read up on these things and watched enough shows and read enough books knows that this stuff's going on. And, you know, in no way the videos, the Tic Tac videos and things, you know, made it any clearer to me. It was just the government acknowledging what I already know.
That's good. Yeah, that's good. So, who's on your wish list? Like who would be other than Phil Collins?
That was the answer. That's the first name that came into my head as soon as you went to that question, I, you know, my head danced around with it for a second, and that was the first name that hit my head. Yeah.
So he would be the ultimate get for you. Yep. So on the paranormal side, who would be somebody that you would really like to get on the show? Because it seems like you have a lot of acts. I mean, Moneymaker might open up a whole, you know, a lot of people you can get on the show.
Yeah, well, so, I had Bobo on the old show. The comedian's talking about Bigfoot. Bobo was on the last episode of that one. And then Matt's been on this one a few times. And I would say Matt would have been the answer to that question. If I never had Matt on the show, I think Matt would have been my answer to your question. So I've maybe already had the person.
Why do you even do the show anymore? You're almost practically like exhausted anything that was interesting to you.
Yeah, you're right. On to another show. I'm done.
Before we sign off here, because this has been fantastic. I think you could tell stories all day. Do you want to kind of give all of our listeners a breakdown? Like, what if they want to go see you perform comedy? Do they got to go? Do they got to only can see you in LA?
I'm retiring from that. No, no, really, I'm not doing much stand up right now. All kidding aside, I'm not. You know, COVID obviously stopped that dead in its tracks when it happened. And then I never really got back to doing a lot of stand up. I'm not that interested in that world at this moment. I did a lot of years of that. I've done a lot of it. And it's just not really where my head is at this moment. So I'm not doing a lot of live stand up right now at all. Yes, there are plenty of new podcast episodes coming. I'm about to record a new one in a few days. We have a famous TV actress, yet another hot chick. Booked for that one. And we have another very interesting paranormal guest for that one. So the next episode is going to be good. And that'll come out, you know, probably before the end of the month. And there'll be plenty of podcast episodes to come. As far as live performance goes, stand up, probably not right now at the moment. And then I'd like to see the podcast develop a live thing. I'd be perfectly open to the podcast doing live, you know, some type of live theater stuff.
I think that would be actually your format would be awesome to have, to have a celebrity there, an actor, actress, musician, mm-hmm. whatever, and kind of do a question and answering in front of a live audience, and then bring out I think that would be fantastic.
Yeah, it would work really well, and I have a lot of ideas for it. And the funny thing is that several of the celebrities that have been on the show are so into it. They love the topic, and they're so into it. So they're so into it that I really genuinely got the impression that they would be thrilled to co-host this show every episode, and and I do think they would, eagerly participate in like a live concert situation. An example of that is Daisy Duke, Catherine Bach, who loved the show, and like I think genuinely would co-host it if I asked her to. And by the way, speaking of great questions that I ask people that are, get something out of people that no one else, we've talked about Richard Klein and the Mr. Furley story. We talked about some other one earlier. I forget which one. But Catherine Bach, Daisy Duke is somebody that I got something out of. To me, it was obvious, but I knew no one ever asked her this because it's just not the kind of thing they would have the nerve to ask. But I knew it's the thing you, me, and anyone else with eyes would be interested in. And so it's the thing I asked.
Does she still wear the shorts?
Does she still wear them? More important, what was she wearing under them?
I think, isn't that answer obvious?
No, I wanted a play-by-play. Isn't that answer obvious? Isn't good enough. I wanted to break down photographs and I got all that from her. I got a detailed play-by-play. She took her phone out and started showing me pictures of her underwear. And it was one of the greatest days ever. I think I announced while she was showing me the underwear pictures that's it, I'm retiring. This is that I have no reason to continue at this point.
I am going to have to send that. I have a friend in that I do music, and one of my friends who I do that with was actually at an event with Catherine Bach. It was for a Dukes of Hazzard thing, and he keeps in touch with her, and he said she was just the most gracious, lovely woman. He said it was fantastic.
Yeah, I'm gonna have really to send him that. She's really into these topics. She's really into it. I mean, like, she was one of the guests that I really remember when we went to the Paranormal Guy. She was on one of the episodes where we were still doing it in person. It was pre-COVID. And she was one of those guests that when we went to the Paranormal Guy, when it was like, okay, now it's time to talk to John Stevens from the UFO Network, like, she practically was like, oh, great, this is what I've been waiting for. Like, she couldn't wait to talk to the UFO Guy.
Like, I'm done talking about the Dukes of Hazzard in my underwear. Right. I want to talk about, oh, God, that's fantastic. I can't wait to hear the new episodes, but I'm going to get a chance to go back and listen to. Now I can go back to the beginning, since now I've heard your Bigfoot story, and listen to the one with Seth Breedlove from the very beginning.
Well, you may not want to listen to that one, because I think that one I retell this story.
I don't want to be surprised.
It's not that one. One of the first few episodes. It may be the Moneymaker one. I do retell this story because I needed to establish it to the audience, and I could swear it's one of those first few episodes, either Breedlove or Moneymaker.
Well, I thought I heard you mention that you told it to Breedlove and he wasn't impressed. So
right, and then maybe I ran it by Moneymaker to get a more valid thought from it.
Well, as soon as we get off of here, I'm texting Seth and I'm gonna say, dude, that was one of the best Bigfoot stories I've ever heard. It's better than anything you're doing on Small Town Monsters.
So well, I don't know what he was weirdly skeptical of the whole Bigfoot thing in general. I remember saying to him on my show when he kind of basically revealed that he had like a lot of skepticism about Bigfoot. I remember like kind of cutting him off and going, all right, thanks for coming. We were done with him.
He was just, cause he's been on our show, and then we just filmed, he just had a new documentary or whatever come out, about UFOs. But the next one, American Werewolves, me and the judge are on. We're in this documentary come out, and he was here filming, at our family's farm. And he and I were getting ready to walk down into the woods, and this is like in December. And he looks at me and he goes, "I just saw one." I go, "What?" And he goes, "Yeah, I finally saw a Bigfoot. I finally saw one myself." And I'm like, was blown away. I'm like, well, first of all,
that's interesting.
That's interesting. So he has not.
I remember being kind of stunned by his skepticism. I remember thinking, I think I said to him, so wait a minute, you're making like movie after movie on this subject that you don't buy into? Like, I remember just everything about it seeming weird to me.
Yeah, he had not seen one. If you go, and now it's all of a sudden turned into a plug for Small Town Monsters. But on their YouTube channel, they started a series, and I can't remember the exact name, but it's all about this property in Eastern Ohio where they live around, and going to this property's got a lot of action. And he finally sees one in daylight, sees one crossing through a natural gas line where it was cut out through the woods. And I mean, he basically jumps off a moving four wheeler because, oh my, he saw one.
Well, I'm kind of glad that happened to him. I can tell you that staying in his universe, in the Seth Breedlove world, one of the last couple episodes we did, we just had Lyle Blackburn on.
Yes, I heard that one. I heard that one. Yes. Yes. And you're right. He's kind of a rock star.
I saw him as like, he's like an unusual Bigfoot, like a Bigfoot guy with charisma.
Yes. Yes, he is. I mean, hey, look, if you want to have a guy on with charisma, get Stacy Brown on.
We had him. No, actually, he wasn't on this show. He was on the old one.
He was on the old one? Oh, gosh. Yeah, Stacy Brown is quite a character.
He's definitely on Comedians Talking About People.
Now, speaking of that, can you find those episodes anywhere?
Yeah, those are still up. I'm pretty sure those are up. I mean, there used to be a website dedicated to that show. There's not anymore to my knowledge, but I don't think the hosting is gone. I think the episodes, I think, still are online.
Okay. All right. Cool. Well, David, hey, I am so glad you took the time to come on and share your experiences and talk about look, let's be honest. I can talk about Bigfoot anytime. Let's talk about the Dukes of Hazzard, Three's Company. That stuff. That's great. I hope our listeners enjoyed that trip down memory lane.
Check out the Shadow Stevens episode that I did, as one of my personal favorites. He was a great guy, and another guy really into the UFO thing. He gave me a whole like serious story that he believes as a teenager he worked for aliens at one point in his life.
What? Okay. All right. Okay. All right. I'm speechless.
Like almost like a Coneheads kind of situation, like where like a family of aliens that live near him that he now thinks were aliens.
Listen, that's fantastic. You totally sold that episode. I may go listen to it right afterwards.
And of course,
after I text Seth Breedlove, then I'm going to go listen to it.
And of course, because he's Shadow Stevens, I had him count down America's Top 5 Monsters.
That's fantastic. That's fantastic. Well, everybody, go check out Monstrosity on anywhere you listen to podcasts. And let's support another great show. You know, that's all I can say. So thanks, David, for hanging out with me for a little bit.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's episode of the From the Shadows podcast. Until next time, never shy away from the darkness or what may be lurking in the shadows. We are out.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.